Hey, it's Eric G. Around the House is sponsored by Baldwin Hardware. For 75 years, Baldwin Hardware has been known for its first-class quality and craftsmanship in door and cabinetry hardware. As an alumnus of the Baldwin Hardware Design Council, I can say I have seen the details and quality from design to the finished product. If you're looking for a new style and old-world craftsmanship, I can tell you there is only one Baldwin Hardware. Check out what would look great in your home at baldwinhardware.com. All right. Thanks for listening to Hour 1 of Around the House with Eric G. Let's go to Hour number 2. For more information, head to aroundthehouseonline.com and make sure you like and follow us on Facebook as well. Now, let's get to the show.
Now we just gotta get you on the radio. Yeah, you gotta get out.
You gotta get on the radio. Welcome back to Around the House with Eric G. This is where we talk home improvement every single weekend. Welcome to hour number 2 of the show. And don't want to miss hour 1 if in case you're just joining us right now, because we had a great time talking with Nathaniel with Chown Hardware. Little potty talk, little toilets. I'm Eric G.
I'm Dane Vodder.
All right. Well, everybody head over to Facebook, Around the House with Eric G. This is our, this is our final show of 2019.
Man.
Now we are wrapping up season 31.
And we got to start gearing up for number 32.
Wow. What is going on here? Well, we got a lot going on. I've had a lot going on. Jeez.
That's putting it lightly.
Yeah, I think, I tell you what, we'll start talking about my house for a second here before we go out to Brian's question. But man, this last week I put on, last weekend into Monday, I put on about 25 gallons of paint, and that's a lot of paint.
Yeah,
that's a lot of paint. Thank you, Miller Paint. You guys rock. I tell you what, I had a good time with their paint, and I'll be honest, I've kind of been a Sherwin-Williams guy for the last 4 or 5 years, and I just switched. So I like good paint, man. This stuff just laid out, and they have this one sheen called Canvas, which is a kind of a matte eggshell.
Okay,
kind of, you know, in that matte family, but it's got some depth to it. So when I'm using more of a white color, it doesn't look like Builder White.
Doesn't look flat.
No, it's a flat sheen, but it's got a lot of depth to it. So it's a rich white, which, it's just like anything with paint, you get what you pay for.
Yep.
But I might even post up some pictures. I've got, if I feel daring, I'll post up some pictures of a kind of a highlights of the last few weeks of getting stuff in there, because I looked like Santa Claus with painting ceilings white with... even though I had safety glasses and the mask, you could see everywhere that wasn't.
I don't know. You say Santa Claus. I thought Bane from The Dark Knight Rises.
There we go. There we go. That's even better. That's even better. Well, you know, we've been talking about a bunch of different subjects with the house and stuff. But one thing I wanted to talk about here, we got a question after last week's show from Brian, who's a avid listener, good guy. I've met him more than once at listener events and stuff. So he shows up and he's very active on Around the House Online on the Facebook page. He was asking questions about downspouts and drainage. So, you know, you've got your gutters, and in Bend, don't worry about it. You can forget about this part, because you guys don't have gutters much over there because they end up being frozen ice troughs. But the thing is you can have a problem when you have a low point drain in your crawl space, let's say. So that is the lowest point in your crawl space, and it drains the outside. Mm-hmm. I've had this go sideways at my old house that I just moved from. Because when they built the house, they tied those low point drains into where the gutters drain. The problem with my house was when the leaves and the trees grew into the gutter, into that low point drain line, because they all merged together into one area, actually two outputs, the gutters would fill up my crawl space.
It would back up.
It would back up and do that. So I don't recommend hooking up those gutters into your low point drain line, because I don't trust any check valve you can put in there, anything else. I think you're just asking for trouble.
Yeah, anytime that you're just going out to one outlet, you run the risk of that getting blocked and then everything backing up.
Yeah, and especially with gutter lines, because unless you've put a whole brand new gutter system in with screens and stuff like that, the chance of that getting clogged up, because most people don't go through and and jet those things out like they should every 4 or 5 years. I think that everybody should be cleaning those storm drains and cleaning those out. I got to do it at my new house here because I've got a fair amount of mud in there just from in the forest where we're at. So I got to go through and jet that out one of these days. But that's one of those projects that needs to happen. And that way you get a good draining system and you don't put water anywhere inside the place. So one thing I wanted to talk about, I hope that answers Brian's question for him. And
real quick, I do want to say, if anyone else has any questions, go ahead and hit us up on the Facebook page. What Brian did is he just added a comment onto a post,
yeah,
and we'll hit it. Or you can give us a call, 503-521-7072. That is a number for texts or calls 24 hours a day.
You got it. Like we heard one last week that we had that was up that was really good. So feel free to join in on these conversations and head over to Around the House Nation as well. There have been some great pictures and stuff. This week's been really good. And I've got some more stuff I'll be posting up there on my project. I don't put it all out onto Facebook, but we put it in the closed group because that's where the real stuff happens.
Absolutely. That's where you update your projects.
Yeah.
So that's where we update our projects.
Absolutely. That's where we have fun with that. Well, let's talk a little bit about, we've got a bunch of different stuff. I want to talk a little bit about sheds and tiny homes and things like that.
Granny flats.
Granny flats.
Like
using your property wisely and, of course, making sure you do it legally. Here's the thing. You need to find and get a hold of your local building department to find out what you can do and what you can't do. Like in my neighborhood where I'm at, I've got stuff that has been, you know, when you think about it, I'm trying to think the best way to put this. My house was built in 77.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot line adjustment. And what they did is they, in the past, in the 2000s, had worked out where you could actually, they adjusted the lot line because I think the neighbor wanted to build a garage, but had to be so much off the property line.
Okay.
So they did this weird jog thing where they could do that. And it worked out really well. However, now I have to be careful because that affects where my carport currently stands to if I want to put a garden shed or something over on that side. You've got to be careful in your neighborhood what you can do and what you can't do. Sometimes you can build right up with a shed to the property line. Sometimes it can only be a 10 by 8 shed. Sometimes they'll let you go 10 by 10. But these are things that you've got to be careful with because when you go to put something in there, you can run into a bunch of building department issues. So do not just go down to the home center or lumberyard, buy your garden shed and at the 10 by 12 and go shove it up against you and your neighbor's fence. You might have a problem there. And then second of all, you got to keep an eye out for easements because here's where it is. If you've got so many homes have like the telephone poles that go through the neighbor's fence,
public
down
utilities.
The back, public utilities. You've got that. Well, the problem is those poles end up having to have access to get into that.
They have to be on public property.
Yeah, usually. So that easement means that you need to have access back there. So if you build a garden shed right across their easement access for the utility line, the chances are if that pole comes down in a storm or anything else, you're going to have to sit there and move that shed.
Yeah.
And if you put it on concrete or anything else, you just got to be careful.
More of a hassle than you want.
Oh, man. And especially when it's going to cost you money. And if it's an emergency, you're now out there one night as they're coming over to turn power onto the neighborhood in the dark. And they're demanding you move your garden shed.
You probably have city workers there waiting on you.
Waiting on you. It's not good. Not good. And so I've seen people really box themselves in with that stuff. And if you've got a septic tank or anything else like that, I've seen people make some mistakes, too, by blocking off access, by putting stuff there. You know, build the deck out where you can't get a truck back there. Well, you now have a problem on getting access back there. So be really careful when you're building stuff out like that. Make sure that you've got great access. And that goes even with landscaping out front, you know, just because they can drive back there. You know, don't go planting trees all in front of that because now you're going to have trees that might have to come down.
No, it's got to be accessible.
Yeah. And that usually means they need to get a truck back there.
Yeah.
Now, if it's your neighbor's house that they have access to, then it's not as big an issue. But just make sure you've got that access. I've seen that cost people a bunch of money on an emergency basis. That's super, super tough. Well, one of the things I want to talk about here coming up in the next segment, I want to talk a little bit about safety because we are in the, you know, we just got through winter solstice and we are now officially in winter. And as we get through, it always seems here in the Northwest, and of course in the Midwest, you know, winter comes a lot earlier than it does out here.
And a little harsher, I would say.
A little harsher, but you know, it's the same issues we have. We have, you know, heaters and maintenance of heaters, and then where are you putting those heaters? And then more importantly, what are you using in your garage for your projects to heat? You got to be really careful, because it's one of those things that I see happening all the time. And carbon monoxide this time of year always hits the news. So be a little careful. It was funny last year when I was working on the house, a couple years ago, when the heater, last year when the heater went down, I was waiting on Pyramid.
Yep.
I caught a gut of grief. Yeah, Thanksgiving. I caught a ton of grief about my propane heater inside the house. But it was rated for inside.
I was going to say, you have a special one that is indoor.
It is indoor. You still got to crack a window or two, but it worked out really well. But hey, when we come back, we're going to talk more about that just as soon as Around the House returns.
And Satchel from Steel Panther, and you are listening to
Around the House with Eric G.
Yeah.
We love Eric G, and you should too.
Welcome back to Around the House with Eric G. This is where we talk home improvement every single weekend. This is our last show of 2019.
But we're not going anywhere.
No. We got a big year ahead. Wrapping up this decade today with Around the House, season number 31. 31. Wow. Crazy. Crazy stuff. Well, we were talking last segment here, and I'm Eric G, by the way.
I'm Dane Vodder.
Well, we were talking about the teasing ahead, I guess, a little bit. About safety with heaters. And I just want to bring this up again. We've talked about it before in the fall, but I just want to take a moment and talk about it because, you know, if you've got those cadet style heaters, they're a wall electric heater. And what happens is there's a fan inside of them with heating elements.
Mm-hmm.
You need in the wintertime to be vacuuming those things out. Oh, once a month.
Okay. I've not currently, but I have lived in a place with one of those for over a year.
Yep.
I never even thought to clean that out.
So what you need to do is go turn the breaker off to that. Make sure that it's completely off. Test it to make sure. Then you're going to take those two face screws off the front of that. And you'll see after you get that front cover off, you'll see a set of heating elements. And you're going to see kind of a squirrel cage fan in there. You need to get in there with a brush. Even an old paintbrush will work too. And a vacuum. And clean all that out. There is no filter in that situation. So it grabs everything. If you've got pets, you might want to do it religiously every month.
Yeah.
You know, versus some people get away with those. But here's the other thing. I think in your home, you need to kind of design out a exclusion zone around them. You don't want to put a Christmas tree next to them or kids' toys. Keep that where it's maybe in a walkway where people aren't going to put stuff in front of it, because piled up blankets or anything else like that, something leaning up against
drapes
it,
or anything,
drapes, yeah. That's a fire hazard. So those will catch on fire. Now, take a look if you've got an older one out of the 80s, for instance. There were some recalls on those where the over limit heat switch didn't click on and turn itself off.
Oh, wow.
So it's not the thermostat, but if it caught itself maybe starting to catch on fire, then it would actually turn itself off. And so there was a massive recall, and follow up on that. Make sure that you have to replace that switch, or more importantly, put another heater in there. So that's a key right there.
You just search the model code on that.
Yeah, right? Once you get that cover off, you'll see the model number on the inside in there, and jump on a quick Google search and you'll find it pretty quickly. So they are still in business, even though they went through and I think they had a bankruptcy or something in there to make it through that massive recall of those things. But still not a bad low budget heater. And, you know, I lived in a house with them and they were fine. And they were the recalled ones. But people weren't maintaining them, so they'd catch on fire, and then you had a big problem. The one thing I want you to be careful, too, is, well, let's get on the shop for a minute. You know, in that garage, you're out there working on the cars. It's 25 degrees outside, and you're freezing.
Mm-hmm.
Be careful and make a good choice. Some of those kerosene heaters can be used indoors where they work really well. Some of them, most of them will tell you you need to have a door cracked or some airflow in there to make sure that you're not burning up all available oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to let you know that I would put in 1 to 2 good carbon monoxide detectors out there and make sure that you've got, depending on the size, that you've got that covered. The last thing you need is to have that happening out there.
Is to have everybody in the home go to sleep when they don't want to.
Correct.
By now, the way, if we can, I know that we usually do this around daylight savings, but we're talking about carbon monoxide testers.
Mm-hmm.
Let's also check those fire detectors.
Yep. Go through, check those. Good time to check it. You know, twice a year is not enough, but go through and check your batteries. Go around and make some noise. Even if the kids are sleeping in on a day over the holidays here.
Yeah, wake them up.
Wake them up. Good time to test it.
They'll be fine.
Oh, yeah. They'll be good. See if they actually get up out of bed or not.
There you go. That's a good one.
That's a good test. It's a good test. So here's one little thing you got to be careful with, though. If you put those in your garage and you keep your car in the garage, when you start the car up,
it's probably going to go off.
It's probably going to set it off. So you got to be careful with that. Sometimes you can get them in there where if that's the case. And one thing, too, don't let your car warm up while you're in the garage either. Start the car up with the garage door open. Get it out as quickly as you can. Close the door.
Yep.
That's one of the reasons why you want to make sure that your garage is well closed up and that air can't make it inside the house, because some people get in there, they start the car up, the garage door's just opening as they're doing it, setting the stereo, adjusting the seat, I want my coffee to go here. You've pumped a lot of carbon monoxide in that garage. So if you do have a couple sensors out there and you're working in it, be careful with that. You might be pulling out of the garage with those things going off and the rest of the house going, what is happening?
Yeah.
I've seen that happen. So maybe it was me, but that's a whole other story.
No comment.
So anyway, that's just one of those things to be careful with, and find a good heater that's going to go in there. If you're doing stuff out in the garage a lot, it might be cost effective for you to put in a mini split heat pump out there that you've got a conditioned space where you can insulate it and actually use it that way. Which is great. That way you can keep it cool, you can keep it hot, but also keep in mind what you're doing in there. If you're, let's say you're putting on laminate on countertops and you got out that good old fashioned contact cement that's flammable, let's not have open flame and flammable materials. Maybe you're painting, spray painting something. Let's not flash off the garage and do that at the same time, because that can be a big, big, big issue
and can come out of nowhere.
Yeah, we don't need to be blowing the garage door out the front of that thing. That's an expensive one, and your medical bills are going to be rough. One thing I want to talk about too is what I'm working on my house here, and we'll talk about it here next segment. I want to talk about thinking about technology and how do you wire up that new flat screen TV that you got. And then before we go out to break, I want to talk about driveway repair. Great example, my house. I've got a long driveway to my front of the house. It's just what it is. But I've also got big 100-year-old trees as well. So I've got asphalt driveway, roots pushing up. I can't do much with that, to be honest.
No, when it's that old of a tree and where you are, they're not going to let you take that down.
The city is not going to let me touch these trees. That would take an act of Congress to do that.
Yep.
But that's protected tree status. I knew where I knew going into it. That's where it is. But I've got an issue, though, where I have water puddling and it's going to create potholes down the road.
Yep.
So down, you know, so if you think about it, I've got a sloping driveway that goes towards a little flat area in front of my garage, and then it goes to my garage door. So what I'm going to do there is I'm going to install a trough drain in. And so that's how I'm going to get rid of mud on the driveway. When we come back, I want to talk about doing some driveway patches. We'll do that just as soon as around the house returns.
Ron Keel, the metal cowboy from Keel, the Ron Keel Band and Steeler. We are rocking around the house with Eric G.
Raise your fist, make your stand for family and friends. All the fields, if you're gonna take on the world, fight like a band.
Welcome. Welcome back to Around the House with Eric G. This is where we talk home improvement every weekend. Thanks for joining us. Happy New Year, everybody.
Oh, yeah.
We're pretty much there.
Almost there. Yeah. Close enough. Let's start celebrating. We're in the middle of the holidays.
We're in the middle of the holidays. And I mean, for us, the next show is going to be in January.
Is the first show of 2020.
So I'm going to say Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
There we go. Well, I'm Eric G.
I'm Dane Vodder.
So I want to talk a little bit about, I'm going to dive in here. I just want to jump around
a little bit.
Jumping around. But I want to talk a little bit about Facebook real quick. Make sure you head over to Facebook, Around the House with Eric G. Make sure you follow, like, join Around the House Nation, because I want to see these projects you've been doing over the holidays. And that's a great place to post stuff up where everybody can comment and see. And I want to see what your remodeling projects for 2020 are going to be. So I'll put up a nice post on the Nation here. We'll ask some questions about what everybody's going to tackle for 2020. Love to see what everybody has to say.
Absolutely. People are usually really good about getting back to us and sharing their projects. We would love for you to join us. It's a closed group. You do have to ask to join, but about 99% of the people we do approve to come in.
Yep. You know, as long as you've got like real friends.
And a picture.
And a picture. And, you know, you're not...
you don't look like a bot.
Yeah, you don't look like a bot or some fake Zimbabwe prince that needs to send you a check for money for you to cash and send back or something like that. You know what I mean? We got to be careful. So here's the thing. We're talking driveways, and you got to be careful too when you have potholes and things like that, because so many people have long driveways or even just a paved one. And what happens is once that surface breaks and you get that crack, water gets down in there. Now, in Portland, for instance, where we're located, that can just wash out underneath there. But if you're in Bend, Oregon, La Grande, Oregon, Chicago, Illinois, that water can get down in there and then freeze and heave that up.
Yep.
And so then that becomes bigger and bigger, and now you got a serious pothole. Now, I've seen multiple ways of doing this. I've seen some people go in there with the cold patch. They'll go in and pack in new gravel down below, build it up, and hit the cold patch over the top of it. And that can work okay. But I've seen it, though, if you don't recoat the driveway and do a sealer coat over the top of it, you need to stop water from getting back down in there.
It's just going to fall back in.
It's just going to fall back in. Now, what I've seen people do is they go in there and they'll dig it out a little bit deeper. And I've seen them leave a couple, 3 inches or so on top of it for a cold patch again. But I've seen people actually go in there and mix up concrete if they've got a trouble area.
Okay.
And they'll come in there and fill that hole partially with concrete so there's a solid base.
Yeah.
So it doesn't move. And if you've got it where that cold patch isn't sticking, I've seen that. I even saw the city do that one time where they threw in some quickcrete concrete into that and then they patched over the top of it. It held up really well.
Yeah.
But it's all about that base. It's all about that base. No trouble. But this is getting cheesy.
Jeez.
I know. But that's the thing you got to be careful with, because That's a weak spot in your area there. Eventually, if it gets to the point where you've got patches everywhere, you're going to want to start over.
And maybe just tear up the whole thing.
Tear up the whole thing. And that could be expensive, though. You know, there are patches you can do. And if it's concrete, you can actually patch that a little bit easier. With driveways, it's amazing the technology out there that you can do for patching. You can actually now skim coat a driveway. They make products you can literally trowel out if you've got a horrible surface on your driveway. As long as it's good enough concrete to grab a hold of, you can go over and skim coat and top coat that whole thing.
It's like a finish over top.
Yeah. And you're only putting a half inch or so on there, but it's meant to be driven on. And so there's a lot of cool things you can do with walkways and driveways when it's concrete. A lot more patching you can do without having to pour a whole new system.
Now, that also will hold up to the elements?
It will. You know, and again, you run into this all the time in freeze-prone areas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and especially what happens, too, is when you get de-icer and salt and those kind of things, that can create its own mess. But yeah, a lot of these new products out there that are trial-on type applications, they work great.
Nice.
And they'll hold up to it. And you can add color to it.
Oh, hey, give it a little character.
Yep. I've seen people actually stamp over the top of it, you know, but again, it's not going to be as good. Let's be honest. It's not going to be as good as replacing putting brand new concrete down.
Yeah.
But if you've got the problem areas under control, and I mean, if you've got an area that's broken up because the concrete's bad and you've got a base that's deteriorating underneath it.
I mean, that's a sign for the rest of the driveway.
Yeah.
The whole driveway.
You need to go
in
and get
like
taken care of, you know, and And if you've got sloping issues, maybe you've got tree roots pushing up on stuff. I mean, you can go in and slab jack and those kind of things with that, where they actually drill holes in the concrete and they pump in either foam or a mortar. I kind of like the mortar a little bit better. The foam, you've got to have a really good operator because it's like spray foam. When you spray out, it expands.
Yep.
Well, it's hard to maintain that. They need to know exactly how far to go. And if they go too far,
you got a mess. Badly.
Now it's high. Now you got a worse problem. So those are things. And I'll be honest, if those are great situations for fixing driveways and sidewalks and patios, do not try to use that to fix your house. It's not meant for it. I've seen people try to do that.
Trying to go down into the foundation or something like that?
Well, let's say they've got a slab-on-grade home, you know, where there's no crawl space. They put up a foundation. They poured concrete in between it.
And then build a house on it.
Build a house on it. Happens all the time. You see that more in California and in certain areas of the country. There is no crawl space and everything is concrete underneath there, which is awesome. But if you've got it where that slab is not, was never packed right, or they didn't compress things right, so you've got loose gravel and that kind of stuff, you got a problem. Well, I saw secondhand through another contractor I know, they went out to look at this job, but a slab jack company had gone in there, tried to lift it with foam, and it went too far and it blew the foundation out.
I was like, you have no way of fixing that at that
point. Well, and you're lifting the house too, because you've got a house on it. So it's not going to go well. It's not going to go well. So that is not meant for internal residential applications.
But the mortar works better though?
I think the mortar gives you more control, to be honest. Okay. I think, in my personal opinion, I know there's going to be foam people out there that are screaming at the radio right now, but I think the mortar gives you, because you can actually dial it up and dial it back. You have control. You can take it to this PSI and stop. With a foam, you better be really good at your job because it's going to expand. And if you put a little too extra in there,
all it takes is a little bit.
A little bit, and you're way too far. And the problem is that these guys are training at somebody's house and you don't want them to be training at yours.
So this is my first time. Well, let's not use the foam.
Absolutely. So anyway, those are some of the options you got out there. And there's a lot of different options. Maybe here in the springtime, we'll bring on an expert and we'll dive a little bit more into that. Because I think that's, it's an important one for spring. Right now, it's not the best time of year to be patching these things.
Not when it's wet and you're doing that outside. Wet,
freezing, it's not. But when it comes down to filling it, right now at least, I would get out there. You can use a cold patch on a dry day out there. You know, get out there and maybe you need a propane heater right there to keep it warm. Just to get the patch done, but at least you can get it done and maybe stop the water from getting in there.
But here during during winter, it'd be a good time to get out there, take a survey, take a look and see how it is. That way you can start planning for spring.
Absolutely. And get those projects lined up because that's one of the keys to that. Well, one of the things I want to talk about here, this segment as well, is technology, because I'm sure there are a lot of new TVs that showed up under the Christmas tree. And, you know, and we got the big game coming up here in January. And so, you know, with all the big sports and everything else going
college
on out there,
college football,
that. You want to, to me, I have a big pet peeve of cables hanging from wall mount TVs.
Yep.
I don't like to look at them.
It's wall mounted for a reason.
So what I did at my house is that I closed up a window. I had a window that was, I had a fireplace with windows on either side of it. I was not going to put my fireplace, a TV over the top of my fireplace. Wasn't going to do it. It was just too short right there because I've got a big vaulted ceiling. It was going to be a horrible situation. So I got rid of that one window. Well, then I went, okay, I need to run and get things organized for cables because I'm not going to be, I got drywall I'm doing. Let's do this. So you can buy, LeGrand makes them, a bunch of different companies make these type of pieces, but they make flush mount boxes that have an electrical outlet that you can run down through, and you don't even have to do electrical with this if you don't want to. You can run it back out, and they've got, basically you're gonna fish that cable down through from up high where you have your TV, and then you cut a hole at the base down there where near where your electrical outlet is, so you can run your HDMI cables and all the stuff up to the TV inside the wall. And then that plug-in, it's almost like an extension cord, you can plug that into the outlet right near it. And now you have power up behind the TV.
There you go.
So you don't have to run an extension cord in the wall or something like that.
Does that work for surround sound as well?
Yeah, you can run cables down from that if you're going that direction. A lot of times, though, you know, with surround sound, you're coming in, you've got your cable box. It's coming out of the cable box. It's going into your receiver.
Yep.
And then many times you're just running cables and HDMI cable up to your TV. And then your surround sound now is going to go from that all the way out. We come back, we'll talk more about that just as soon as Around the House returns. Welcome back to Around the House with Eric G. This is where we do home improvement every single weekend. Thanks for joining us for the last segment of this decade.
2010's goodbye.
Yep. Now, 2020. Well, we've got the vision.
And we've got some new ideas coming in, too.
We've got a lot of great stuff coming up here in starting January. So stay tuned. Some exciting new stuff. And I'm Eric G.
I'm Dane Vodder.
All right. Well, let's finish up talking about home technology here real quick. One of the things when you're dealing with surround sound and all that other stuff, pick out your system you want to use. And I'm not a big soundbar person. I've not really liked soundbars. So I really like to get, you know, a new system to go out. If you're putting that new TV in, that new surround sound is great. Depending on how many speakers you're going with, the wireless ones are getting much better. But running wires around for that can be a dog.
Yeah.
And if you're doing a remodel, sometimes that works out really well. But to be honest, if you're going to do a wired system, getting that wire around up the wall for like your speakers behind you.
Then across the ceiling.
It can be a rough one. And to do it right, you're removing a fair amount of drywall. So I would look at how you're doing it. There might be a way to do it. I don't like taking wires out and around across the house and back in. And we're, you know, basically your options are either going down through the floor, back up the wall, fishing it back up and doing it that way, or just going with a new wireless system.
Yeah.
So there's ways to do that.
Well, as long as they aren't dropping out as much as they kind of used to, the wireless ones.
They used to be horrible. Yeah. Oh my gosh. It was like there was a 2 second count.
And I think it's interference out. Too with like microwaves and everything. It just, you would cut out and lose it in the middle of your awesome movie. No.
You know, I mean, my system now is wired, but that's what you got to do. So yeah, something to think about, people, when you're dealing with this kind of stuff, that can be a decent problem to work with. And, you know, I like those surround speakers, but, in my house now, the new one, I'm going to try out a wireless system now, 'cause I want to do some reviews.
So, and you know, I'm not sure about this, but as far as surround sound goes, how is it going with like pairing up with home technology?
Oh, there's a lot you can do, especially when it gets into receivers and stuff, because they can be grabbing your Spotify and your Pandora digitally.
There you go, blasting it out.
You can do. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do with that nowadays. I like doing them though when you got a set of B speakers, and people go, "What do you mean B speakers?" Well, that's that second channel that you can put an outdoor set of speakers on.
Oh, okay.
So when you buy a receiver, go out and take a look that you can have an outdoor speaker, so you can have your outdoor party and your music inside on one system, and you don't have to worry about your little Sonos or whatever else. I mean, you could do big systems that way, but that way you're not having to use your Google Play and stuff and have two speakers and two different music going. Well, hey, I wanted to mention anybody out there traveling that are in the trades. I'm going to be down here towards the end of January here at the International Builder Show and the Kitchen and Bath Industry Show. So I'm going to be giving a ton of seminars. First off, Tuesday morning, which is that week of the 22nd, I think it is the of January, is the Kitchen and Bath Industry Show. So I'll be doing a next one at 10:30 over for the International Builder Show, IBS, on their technology stage over there. So that's the High Performance Building Zone stage.
For those of you that have followed Around the House with Eric G on the Facebook page, you know that when Eric goes and does these cross-country trips, he always puts up pictures and different teases, at least on stuff that you can share.
Oh yeah, there'll be a lot of that this year, as well as some other fun stuff that's happening too. So keep your eyes out for all of this stuff. Now, after that, I'll be back in here the first week of February. I'll be in Boston. And so I'll be out there for the Northeastern Retail Lumber Association for the Lumber Building Material Expo. So I'll be out there giving some speeches as well on home technology and interior design and kitchen design. So I'll be talking about that in Boston that week. And then in March, I'll be in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania for the ideas show out there. So keep an eye out for that one.
I don't think you haven't done that one over the last.
That's
couple
a new
years,
one for me. So I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully I'll be able to get up and meet with Jeff Devlin.
There you go.
So meet up with him. My little brother lives about an hour and a half away from there. So go hang out with the kids and my brother and his family. So good to see you guys out there in March. So I'll be on the road a little bit, but show will still be going strong.
Road tripping.
Road tripping. All right, man. Well, Happy New Year's.
Happy New Year. Happy 2019 and 2010s. It's been a good one.
Yep. When you get rid of this decade, time for a new one. When we come back, it'll be a whole new year. I'm Eric G.
I'm Dane Vodder.
And you've been listening
to Around the House.
Around the House by Eric G. is produced by Design by Eric G. in association with Salem Media and distributed nationally by Envision Networks. All rights reserved. Copyright 2019. Designed by Eric G. We will be back next week. If you missed part of the show, check out the podcast of all the shows at AroundTheHouseOnline.com. Remember, measure with a micrometer, mark with caulk, and cut with an axe. Thanks for listening to Around the House.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of Around the House with Eric G. We really appreciate it. Like and follow us on Facebook. That's Around the House with Eric G. And make sure you listen to the podcast and subscribe, follow, comment, and share to all your friends. We'd really appreciate it. For more information, head to AroundTheHouseOnline.com. Make sure and follow our podcast Shorts, which is our midweek special on Wednesdays, and Around the Toolbox for the trades on Thursdays. Thanks for listening to Around the House.
Hey, it's Eric G from Around the House. Are you planning a decking or siding project this year? If you are, you've got to check out my friends at Millboard. Millboard is a completely different kind of composite decking and cladding that enhances outdoor spaces with enduring distinction. Hand molded from the finest oak, it realistically mimics the natural grain and color of premium hardwood. If you're looking for something that doesn't look like plastic and instead real wood, check out Millboard.com. Make sure and check out that interview we did just a few weeks back. That's Millboard.com.